You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome inside the Celtics Life Podcast. I am Topher Lane here with Justin Quinn, and we are neck deep in the armpit of the offseason that some may call the doldrums. That's why in this episode, we'll be following what our Celtics are up to, some history, and our own dreams for the association. Plus, we've still dug up all kinds of other news for you. So let's dive right in. Justin, how you doing?
I'm pretty caffeinated.
Yeah.
It's too bad on a summer day.
Definitely need coffee for this time of year because it's so slow. There's just not a lot going on, you know, at least with basketball. With everything else, if you're a baseball fan, it's great. But you know, for basketball, you definitely need coffee, caffeine, whatever you can get.
Yep. There I am.
Yeah. So let's start off with what our Celtics are up to, right? So in terms of actual basketball, Jaylen Brown just played in the Africa game. He played for Team World.
For those of you who are not familiar, that is part of Basketball Without Borders, a program by the NBA to kind of grow the game overseas to not just generate interest, but also generate potential basketball players who could join the association one day. So it's a pretty big deal. And to have a Celtic or, you know, and a couple of ex-Celtics involved in the training staff and also playing alongside Jaylen Brown, it's a pretty big deal.
And there were some pretty good names alongside Jaylen on Team World. You had Kyle Lowry, Kemba Walker, who were kind of current stars. I put that in air quotes. Nowitzki, who's obviously, I mean, he just, his knowledge of the game is insane. Just his ability. And I'm sure that he's just a great role model for a guy like Jaylen. Yeah, Kristaps Porzingis, who's an up-and-coming player, CJ McCollum, Andre Drummond. There's just a great combination of players. And Jaylen was a standout player in this game.
He was the leading scorer for Team World.
Yeah, 16 points, finished with
15 points.
15 points?
Yep.
Close enough. Still, enough, more than a dozen points. That's good. And he shot pretty well. It was a good game all around for him.
He had some flashy stuff going on, too. That feed behind the back to Drummond. Pretty good stuff.
And meanwhile, his competition was pretty good players as well. Serge Ibaka is probably the most starry player that they had. Dennis Schroeder is solid and is definitely given the Celtics fits.
Oladipo took off too for 28 points.
Yep, Oladipo. I always forget about him being a good basketball player.
I mean, he's not a great basketball player, but he's a very solid one.
And now he's on the Pacers.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Who else was on it? Mba Mute.
Schroeder.
On there. Schroeder, yep, Schroeder. Bismack Biyombo, who's been
up and down
since his last season with the Raptors.
Dang.
Yeah, so there is solid squad.
Absolutely. Solid. I mean, it might not have been an all-star game, but it was definitely not, you know, a D-League outing.
It definitely wasn't summer league, you know, where you're going up against these guys that are rookies. Sometimes they're not even on contracts. They're just signed to summer league deals. So this was more serious competition than what he'd been playing in the last month and a half. And he was doing really well, all things considered.
Now, I know that Joel Embiid was supposed to play, but I believe he's still recuperating from his injury, so I don't think he did.
He was on Team Africa, right? Or supposed to be on Team Africa? Yeah.
For those of you who aren't familiar, the way they work it out is anybody who was born in Africa in the NBA or who have a parent at least who was born in Africa is eligible for Team Africa, and Team World obviously is drawn from everywhere else.
But what qualifies you for Team World? Do you just put your name in a hat and then they just draw? And
you know, I don't actually know. That's a good question. I'll have to look into that.
There's a lot of people to choose from. And do they have to be NBA players, or can they be like guys from France or things like that?
I think it's just limited to NBA players because they are trying to do this for the NBA's profile overseas.
All right. Fine. Well, it's still a good game to watch. And I think that if you have League Pass, you can watch it again on NBA.com. Maybe, I think. Otherwise, we post the highlights.
So if you can't, we've got you covered.
Yeah, we post the highlights to Celtics Life, so check that out, especially Jaylen Brown stuff. So. Yeah, it was a good game to watch. I caught it later afterwards, and it was entertaining for sure.
What else we got on tap?
NBA might change the rules because Danny Ainge fleeced Brooklyn so hard.
Yeah, I am not a fan of that. Even if I were the Nets fan, I wouldn't be a fan of that. Just because, as I said in the piece that I wrote on that, if you look at the CBA already, it's so convoluted. You have to spend hours and hours and hours just to get a basic idea of how trades work. Never mind any further kind of, I guess legislation isn't, but regulation is not going to make the situation better, in my opinion. There will always be a way the general manager, in the spirit of trying to be a competitor and or save their job, will find a way to screw the team up royally. So just let them. And then they can get fired, and then the team can suck, and then teams can, you know, be a little more vigilant.
Well, so I see the logic in both sides, right? And especially with something like Brooklyn, where they invested so much money into getting into this market and like getting into New York and getting into this like brand new stadium. And they were expected to be like a really big deal, and they wanted to win, and they like had what probably should have been the pieces that would have given them a good team. And maybe it was a bad move. Obviously, in retrospect, it was, but
I think so. I mean, not for
they
us.
Ruined, they ruined like 6 years, probably longer, of this team's future.
Yeah.
And it's all because of just this one deal that was a Billy King made.
It was Billy King. There's been very little talk about who was ultimately really responsible for that. And a lot of people think that the owner, Mikhail Prokhorov, I think is how you say his name, was really the driving force behind that, because he wanted to make a big splash and he had the money. He didn't have the knowledge, you know, in terms of
splash.
Yeah, he definitely made a huge splash. And, you know, they made the playoffs once.
But I can see the logic, because someone can damn their team's future for a long period.
And I agree that, you know, maybe a modicum of regulation isn't necessarily a bad thing, but we already have that in the Stepien rule, which is named for the Cleveland Cavs owner in the early 80s who traded away, I believe, like 4 or 5 seasons straight worth of first-round picks.
Hmm.
And his team was basically that generation's Brooklyn Nets. I don't really know that they needed to do anything like that again, because most of the teams around the league saw just how terrible that team was for so long.
Yeah.
If that's not good enough for you, then I'm sorry, but your organization deserves whatever it gets.
I think this is a perfect storm of circumstances, though. I think with it being a big investment in New York, if this were like Sacramento or a smaller market team, maybe even like the Clippers, I don't think the NBA would care.
We're talking billions of dollars, and I don't think the NBA does care. I think that this was a proposal from at least one of the organizations that is not pleased with the Celtics' success, possibly Brooklyn, but maybe not necessarily. And it never went anywhere, this proposal, just because I think people tend to agree that there's already a basic framework in place to keep people from destroying themselves with their own hubris, basically.
Well, so in layman's terms, what does this proposal do?
In a nutshell, what it does is it takes the Stepien rule, which is a rule which limits the ability of a team to trade their pick multiple years in a row, or more specifically, you must control one first round draft pick every year. It doesn't necessarily have to be yours, but you need to be able to have a first round draft pick for several years in a row. And if you don't already have one in hand, then you can't trade away another one. So you do need to be – so in other words, if there's a 3-year stretch, you need to be in control of a draft pick 2 of those 3 years.
2 of the 3 years?
2 of the 3 years. and you can't trade away your own draft pick in consecutive. So what happened with the Brooklyn trade now, we got three first round picks spread out in alternating years. And then in between one of those, at the last minute, Billy King was talked into adding a pick swap for last year, which got us Jaylen Brown. Now, obviously, I'm a little...
That was this year's, right? This was the year that we had the
swap. Excuse me, 2017. Tatum.
Yeah. That's Tatum, and then we swapped. What about
this round? But anyways, the basic premise of that allowed them to get around the spirit of the deal by allowing them to swap a pick, even though they still controlled the pick. Do you see what I'm saying? In this instance, yeah. they still technically controlled the pick, but it really allowed them to take advantage of the hopes of the Celtics at the time when they made this proposal to capitalize on the likely crappiness of the team at this juncture, and boy, did it work. So at least one general manager was very pissed off about that, and it's quite possible that would be the Nets general manager.
I can understand why, with you describing it, I can understand why you mean that this just adds another layer of complexity, because it's just like trying to be a front office guy and staring at this scenario of like, okay, well, the Nets ditched their pick last season, so we can't ask for it. Like, it would just be the most I'm imagining trade conversations and just this hell raising of trying to figure out what we can trade, what we can't trade, because what we did a year ago, 2 years ago, stuff like that.
And it seemed like it would solve the problem, right? But I mean, they found a way around it. They'll probably find a way around it again. So
yeah.
At what point do we really say, all right, if you're going to be that creative at screwing yourself, go ahead.
Yeah, just have to accept stupidity and accept that people are going to screw themselves sometimes.
I mean, if they're trying that hard, if they're being that creative, then who am I to get in their way?
Yeah. Well, it's the 10-year and week anniversary of the Celtics trading their first round pick for Kevin Garnett.
That kind of worked out okay.
Kind of, I think. Yeah. More than that. It actually does have to do with the Brooklyn trade, because obviously Kevin Garnett was part of that trade. So it's like a combination of trade. This segues into this part so much better than I thought. Yeah, Kevin Garnett, 10 years ago in like a week and a half.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little dated now, but we're a weekly podcast during the summer. We don't do the midweek, so we're cramming a lot of information in. And really, it's been a great gift in terms of giving us something to pay attention to after the whole Cleveland is imploding thing with Kyrie Irving last week going on. That died down. We still had something else to talk about for a while. We got to reminisce about the 2008 run and thinking about how that is going to, you know, impact winning with this new team that we put together out of the shell of the old. And it's been really great, in my opinion, you know, not just for nostalgia purposes, but it's also given us some stuff to think about in terms of putting together a super team and what we might be able to expect out of the Celtics coming up this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do want to say Kevin Garnett was the first Celtics jersey that I got.
Really?
And that started my curse of when I get a jersey, the guy's going to be traded that like following off season or during that course of that season. That started the curse because I got a Kevin Garnett jersey. He was traded that.
Isaiah Thomas jersey.
I did just get an Isaiah Thomas jersey. It is sick and I'm really worried about it.
It should be, and I'm going to be.
But my Jay Crowder jersey is strong. It's like I've held on to that for two years.
How long did
now.
It take the KG one to work out?
I bought it in the spring of 2013.
So
and he was traded that following spring, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, or like later that spring or that summer.
I had a theory that maybe you had some kind of like, you know, waiting period, but that's shot to crap. So.
Oh yeah, it's like instantaneous and posters too. Like I got an Adrian Gonzalez poster on the Red Sox, and then that was when Carl Crawford and Josh Beckett were traded off and Gonzalez was like the trading chip. So like I just have if I get any swag for any team, for some reason the player, with the exception of Jay Crowder and currently Isaiah Thomas, are traded almost instantaneously. Well, almost.
I totally understand how, you know, logic doesn't necessarily need to play into superstitions too hard, because for a long time I thought that I was the key to New England teams being successful. Considering that I moved out of New England in 2004 and just look at Boston sports since then.
Yeah, I was walking through Logan today and they've got all the banners. This is my first time flying out of Logan in a really long time. They've got all the banners up there, but they still haven't put up the 2017 Patriots Super Bowl. And I was surprised. But I was just looking at the last like 15 years of Boston sports and it's insane. It's absolutely wild. So I guess we should thank you because you left.
Happy to do my duty.
Well, we appreciate it. But cross sports, though, Brad Stevens was actually everywhere. Like Brad Stevens was at a Patriots practice. Isaiah Thomas was at the Pats practice today. Yes, yeah, so Sunday or Monday, I should say. Yeah, so Monday, and then also Mookie Betts came to his thing. Red Sox center fielder or right fielder, I should say, was at Isaiah Thomas camp on this weekend. I think it was Saturday or Sunday. So just suddenly, everyone's kind of intermingling between kind of this rich heritage of Boston athletics.
They didn't used to do that, or if they did used to do that when I lived there, the internet wasn't savvy enough to tell us about it.
True. But, I mean, just the masterminds. Can you imagine the conversation that Brad Stevens and Bill Belichick had at that practice? Because there was a picture taken of them talking. And just like
to be a fly on the wall in that conversation.
I'm like trying to I don't know if they have any ability to like small talk or if they're just like both too brilliant to do that. They just kind of stood there. I don't know what happened, but that just must have been.
I just picture Brad talking a lot and Bill scowling a lot.
Yep. Drugging, kind of looking in a direction. Yeah. That's fair. We should get Mark in here. Mark's our big Pats guy. I think of the four of us, the podcasters, I think he's
the biggest
Pats fan. Yeah. So we need to get him on this. But I love Danny Ainge's tweet because he tweeted at that picture and he's like, they're probably talking about like sweatshirt cutoffs or something. I need to find that exact tweet, but it was amazing. Danny Ainge just had a sense of humor on Twitter this offseason.
He has. He's been really out there. I'm starting to wonder if he's got somebody running his Twitter for him.
He gave up on running his own. Yeah, what was that? It was actually a really amazing, because he's been, over the last week, it's been
you
fantastic.
See that thing that he's doing with for his son on Twitter? Getting dumped?
No. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I have a theory. Okay, so for those of you who haven't seen the tweet, Danny Ainge is allowing himself to potentially be dunked into one of those big dunk tanks that you see at county fairs and whatnot to raise money for Tanner Ainge's campaign, which is going to be drawing to a close soon. He's running for, I think, Congress?
Yeah,
out in Utah. And for those of you who weren't paying attention to the family tension they had going on during free agency, Gordon Hayward was, you know, kind of a sticking point on between the two family members, with obviously Tanner trying to retain him, pitting him against his father. So I kind of think this is a nice way to say to the people of Utah, you know, we're not sorry, but we know you're frustrated. So here, vote for my son and throw me in the water.
I would be so against anything to do with the Celtics, even if it's only like the owner's or, well, GM's son. I would just, if I were upset about them taking Gordon Hayward, I would definitely not vote for Tanner Ainge out of spite.
But would you pay $25 to throw the guy behind it into a tank? I would. Granted, it's still going to help Tanner, but.
What's the situation where we've gotten, where someone's been taken from us? I'm trying to think of
I think the best situation we can think of like that would probably be Ray Allen leaving in free agency.
So just dunk Pat Riley?
Dunk Pat Riley even if he hadn't been.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm kind of biased.
Yeah, that's fair. I could, yeah, you're right. Okay, fine. Yeah, I get it. $25 for to dunk Danny Ainge, that's fine. But also, I feel like maybe we're just like biased and Celtics fans, but I feel like Pat Riley is a lot more hateable.
Oh, infinitely. I mean, he's like the Darth Vader of general managers.
Is that just us being biased, though, or is that a worldwide?
I mean, it's generally a consensus if you're not a Lakers fan or a Heat fan.
Yes. I mean, I hate him. He's the worst. And I loved when
I respect him, but I do not Gordon like him.
I love when the Gordon Hayward thing leaked, and like Celtics Life, right? We were tweeting about how it was either Jay Crowder, Pat Riley, who leaked the thing when the Gordon Hayward announcement was made, but it wasn't actually an announcement. I know, but there was jokes that it was either Crowder, Pat Riley, or the guy who does Family Feud, the one who did
Steve
the
Harvey.
Miss America thing. Yeah, Steve Harvey is one of those three. I like to imagine it was Pat Riley because he wanted Gordon Hayward.
I think it was Pat Riley, to be honest. Yep, it's a nice little knife you can throw into the mix just to make things awkward for people.
That's going to be in our conspiracy pod. 100%.
Absolutely.
ESPN, and I don't get this, and this makes me kind of upset. ESPN has Boston win the East.
That makes
I
you
agree
upset.
With that. No, I agree with that. That's not. Let me finish. But it's with 49.4 wins.
Well, there is a good explanation for this, but let me just go ahead and get ahead of it. and say that I do not like the model that Kevin Pelton, who's the guy who put this together, he used RPM as its primary driving force in determining this. And his explanation as to why the Celtics would both win the East, which of course we're both happy about, but also win less games, is because in his mind, there was such a 3-point dependent team and there were so many close games. So with such a dependence on a high percentage shot and so many close games, his explanation is that three or four of them will probably end up going the other way this season just because of the high percentage rate of that shot being what it is.
Okay.
Because there were a lot of games last season that were won, you know, on a bucket or two.
But what about your extraneous factors?
Like the fact the East
is so much worse.
Oh, I know, but...
How does that not warrant us more wins?
Hey, you know, the other thing to consider here is that he is looking at teams like the 76ers, who he has not making the playoffs, which I think is a little surprising, but he assumes that all the players who are going to be playing on the roster are healthy because they don't have a way to predict for injury or recovery. And a lot of these teams, 76ers, potentially the Heat. You know, there's quite a few teams around the league that could be dealing with injury, particularly in the East. The Bucks with Jabari Parker. Those teams, you can't use this like modeling program and tell it to simulate injury. It's just not possible. I mean, maybe someday they'll come up with some kind of a algorithm to do that, but there's a lot of baked in faults to the system. Just because you can't necessarily predict for a lot of these things. Even things like, you know, we know that Jabari Parker is not going to be back at the beginning of the season. He's just not. And even if he was cleared to play at a very, very early date, he would still be very bad and out of shape for a while. So I get it. I just don't like it.
I don't agree with the Celtics only winning 49.
Well, I mean, they can't win 49.4 games, which is what he has.
I know. But 49 is way too low.
I think that their floor is about a 55 win team, and I think that they're going to be between 58 and 60 wins, not based on modeling, but based on what's gone on in the East and what's gone on with the team, and just, you know, building off of last season. The only way I think that doesn't happen is we might end up a couple of wins above this 52-53 wins about last year if Isaiah Thomas is still slow to recover early in the season and Gordon Hayward has to pick up the slack for him, God forbid.
So he did say this past weekend that his hip was feeling great.
Yeah, so I don't really think that's too much of an issue.
So that's for sure.
Among the rookies who come back, who do you think is actually ready to get serious playing time?
Well, what are we saying, first of all, when we're saying serious playing time? 10 minutes a game, 5 minutes a game, 15, 30?
Who do you think would fall in those categories? And then from that standpoint, who do you think is ready for it?
If you're not making at least 10 minutes a game, then you're just an experiment. You know, the way that Brad plays, if you're getting less than 10 minutes, you're not a right part of the rotation, really. They're just trying you out to see how you might fit with whatever pet project of a lineup he's working on. So for me, 10 minutes, those are guys who have shown something. And pretty much everybody else is unlikely to play more than a six-man type of, like, let me start over. There's only one person on this team who I think is likely to get a chance to play north of 10 minutes a game. That is Jason Tatum. Yes.
Jason.
In my opinion. I think that Gershon Yabusele and Ante Zizic could start out playing as much as around 15 minutes a game. But if they you know, show problems on their defensive assignments, if they show, like in the case of Yabusele, if they don't look like they're quite ready in terms of, you know, conditioning, and based on what I've been seeing with Jaylen Brown and Gershon Yabusele, I think that's not going to be an issue. But I digress. Those two, I think, have a fairly solid shot early in the season. I think by the end of the season, we could also be seeing Shemi Ohale. I think that's, I'm working on it, guys. Working on it. Saying his name, that is. I think he might also get up to that by the middle to the end of the season. I don't really know how Tice, Daniel Tice, I think we agree that's how we're going to say his name. Yeah. I've been hearing it around the league, people talking about him, saying it that way. So I think that he also has a chance. He's technically not a rookie, but I'm counting him as one because he's only played a couple of minutes of summer league in the NBA so far. As far as I'm concerned, he's a rookie. And Kadeem Allen, and if Jabari Bird does end up getting that second two-way spot as well as Kadeem Allen's, I think that they might be able to play spot minutes in games, but I don't even think we're going to see them more than a handful of games this season. That's my opinion. What about you?
I would agree with a lot of what you're saying. I think that Jabari might be kind of like a J.J. Redick. Like he'll see some time off the bench as like a sharpshooter kind of deal. Semi as well. And that's kind of my hot take.
Crazy.
As far as
Defensive capability to stay on the floor, so I do think that they have a greater likelihood. Kadeem Allen still needs a lot of work in that regard.
Yeah, and I think obviously Zizic and Yabusele, based on who does well, and I think that's something that's definitely up in the air because we don't know what we got with Yabusele in the NBA. Zizic we saw with a lot of issues in summer league that he fixed pretty quickly.
Yeah, pretty nice.
So like his kill rebound, catch the ball, bring it down, and then it gets stripped almost every time. And he fixed that between summer league, right? And that's something that he'll have to continue to work on, but it seems like he is at least adaptive in that sense, and I think we'll continue to see him improve. Yabusele, similarly, we don't know what we've got though, but I'm hopeful that I would prefer Yabusele to be better just because of personal preference. I just think he's awesome. Yeah, but I think it entirely depends. I think they're both going to have each other's minutes, and it's going to depend on who's doing better by the latter stages of the season, who's going to see serious minutes in crunch time. And then everyone else. I'm not sure how to feel about Tice. If I don't really have a good read.
We just haven't seen very much of him, so.
Yeah, and then, again, I think Bird would be a legitimate option off the bench if he really plays up to what I think he's capable of, which I actually think he's got a pretty high ceiling.
What I saw in summer league, he can bury a corner three. He can guard fairly well across at least three positions that I saw. I think once he's playing actual NBA players, he should at least be able to guard wing players fairly effectively.
And with the loss of Bradley, I don't know who we turn to as far as a sharpshooter goes, you know? Bradley was a lot of times I think Celtics fans would agree he was our three-point shooter. Jay Crowder was probably next in line. And Isaiah was sporadic. I mean, he was consistently sporadic is a good way to describe Isaiah Thomas.
And then there's Marcus Smart.
And so we need somebody who can shoot because that was something, there were games where we shot like 25% from the floor as a team.
Everybody can shoot the three well, like a league average, except for Marcus Smart.
Yeah, and I think Jay Crowder's going to have to step up as a shooter. And I don't know where he's going to fit on the floor.
He was Gordon hitting Hayward above 40% last season, so I don't think that worked.
He was. I really like Jay Crowder, and he found his role in the corner. Yeah. I really appreciated that. But I think that one of these rookies, whether it's Semi or Jabari, is going to be kind of the sharpshooter.
If they find their stroke, they'll have a spot.
I think so. And I really want it to be Semi. Although I want a Bird jersey that isn't Larry Bird because I think it's fun.
Yeah,
I'd wear it ironically.
Change the number.
But Gordon Hayward, so we wrote about this. I'm not exactly sure who wrote it, but we wrote about Gordon Hayward running the point. And this is kind of contingent on a lot of different things. If Isaiah doesn't start the season because of his hip injury, and we'll kind of see where that stands once preseason and summer camp and stuff start up. But do you think that Gordon Hayward can run the offense at point?
I do think that the kind of offensive sets that Brad Stevens run, there's enough of an emphasis on ball movement that you can get away with not having a primary ball handler being the ball handler. Just as long as the person bringing up the court is capable enough not to get stripped against most people guarding them, at least to half court, I think it can work. And the fact that he can be the offensive threat that he is, like, he draws enough gravity in terms of defenders where he can kind of compensate for the fact that he doesn't have the tightest handle and he's not the best passer. If he can just draw two people consistently and then move the ball to somebody who's relatively open, I think you can still initiate offense that way.
And as it stands now, Morris can stretch the floor if he's at the five. We've got just this insane
very
space.
Few players on this team can't hit and the three at least.
Yeah. And so there's just so much space. Like, the only guy that can arguably sag Aaron off is Marcus
Bane
Smart.
Also, but I mean.
But I don't see Bane's getting a ton of
I think he's just going to basically be maybe like, oh, crap, we're losing the rebounding battle because they have a tough big guy. Put him in.
Yeah. He'll be used sparingly.
10 to 15 minutes a game normally, maybe a little bit more in some of those old school kind of matchups.
Yeah, when you're going up against, like, I don't even know, Greg Monroe when he's getting serious. Maybe the Pistons, yeah. Yep. But otherwise, I think Hayward would have the ability, because he's got court vision. Yep. He's got pretty good court vision. His ability to drive and kick.
Yeah.
And his size also. I mean, it would just be a matchup nightmare for
there's ways to deal with Hayward being your primary distributor. You can adapt to it, but in short bursts or via necessity, it's enough.
Yeah, I agree. He's been working out with Semi also. So kind of both new Celtics, but they're both sticking
like
together
that.
Right now.
Do you know why I was in San Diego? Is there any particular reason that you know of, or is that just, you know, a nice place to work out in the summer?
Gordon Hayward lives
there.
I thought that's where it, I thought so, because that's where he was when he was
making
his
agency
decisions.
I was wondering what the connection might be. Good to know.
I thought so. I might be completely wrong, but I swear I saw that somewhere. And I also saw a Celtics fan on Reddit who had said that he met Gordon Hayward while he's going into, like, the USC gym because he's working out at USC. And apparently he was a really nice dude. He was, like, totally cool with it. He was wearing a Celtics shirt. So, no, it's cool. I like it. I like that he's sticking with the rookie and that he's helping him out, I'm assuming. And that the pictures, he was smiling, so it seems like he's happy to be a Celtic. That's my inference.
I would.
And yeah, I was pleased.
So one thing that I would like to talk about that we haven't broached yet is, you know, with all the changes happening to the Celtics, some of the changes that you'd like to see, and also myself, I have some ideas, in the NBA.
Sure.
Do you want to start? Because this was your idea.
Okay,
show me what we got. Let's see what we got.
Well,
Mr. Commissioner,
considering that an important Celtics writer lives in Mexico City, that would be me. I'm, you know, blowing smoke up my own ass, but whatever. excuse me. I'd like to see some expansion, particularly to Mexico City, which has been floated as a potential location. And I would like to see one of the bigger wrongs of league history righted, giving the other of the two franchises just so playoffs stay nice and even. Back to Seattle. I'm not really sure exactly where. I honestly think that they would be a better fit in the West, and then you could bump Memphis to the East and maybe NOLA to the East.
Okay. I just didn't think that you could move people, but that's reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, it's not too difficult. Just,
I like that.
You know, I mean, we have like Oklahoma City in the Pacific Northwest region. That makes no sense. There'd be some shuffling going on.
Yeah. And obviously the divisions aren't consequential anymore at all, so that doesn't matter that much, but the conference is what matters. But and it's not nearly as bad as it is in football as far as like Eastern versus Western, but yeah, the fact that like the Grizzlies are in the East and you have even the Bulls in the East seems strange to me compared to a handful of other teams that are in the West. It's just like,
yeah, I've also heard of breaking it into fourths, which I guess you could do also, but I don't know. I don't really know if you need to overcomplicate things and make some gradual changes and see how they work out.
Arguably, though, that could make it a more entertaining playoff system. You break it into fourths, go kind of like bracketology in college, where it's like four regions coming together. That could be more fun, and it might solve the problem of like, oh man, the playoffs are so messed up because, you know, the West is so much better than the East, and so people don't feel like it's as
fair. You might see a little bit more balanced matchups that way.
Yeah, actually, I like that.
I'll work on thinking out any potential unforeseen problems, because there always are.
Yeah.
For aesthetic reasons, I would like a nice, you know, parsimonious solution to the Hacker problem. It really makes for an unwatchable product. I don't like it. But at the same time, I do want foul shooting to stay mostly what it is, because it's been an important part of the game for a very long time. And I don't think that it necessarily screws up the aesthetics when it's not abused. So in the last 2 minutes of a game, and well, of a half, I should say, the rules change for a foul. So that way you get an automatic point and possession. So it eliminates the incentive for a hacker in that situation, because they're going to score 50% from the free throw line that doesn't exist anymore right out the gate, and they just get the ball back. So any potential advantage you would have gotten from fouling just goes away. Now, you still shoot normal fouls. The foul rules stay the same all the way through, except for maybe we could institute this once any team gets to 8 fouls and a half, just because they're clearly, you know, trying to take advantage of like a DeAndre Jordan or, you know, Andre Drummond or just whoever is the functional Shaq of a particular game. So once it's clear that there's a pattern of behavior that's being abusive towards that rule, you know, 8 fouls, 10 fouls, something like that, not a small amount, and or the last 2 minutes of the half.
But then that gets so – that fouls would be so much worse. Mm-hmm. Like, let's say you're down by one or two. And it's a really big play. LeBron James drives and gets a really shady contact call from a ref. All right. Misses it. Suddenly they get ball and a point.
Yep. That is correct.
That's ridiculous. Cause then they have, you know, a 3-point lead and the ball, even though it was maybe
that there was a foul called that gave them some kind of shady advantage. The problem there would be bad officiating. And they are trying to solve that by putting another official on the floor. And there's other things that they could do to tidy up officiating and other rule changes they can make also to that effect. I'm not convinced that that's really a particularly good argument, because you can still do that now and then you get 2 shots if you're a good player.
Okay, let's say it's a legitimate foul then. Let's say he actually gets hit pretty hard. Still gets a point and ball, that there's a chance that they then turn it into a 3-point play even if he misses the basket. There's a chance they make it into a 4-point play if
great
he gets the basket.
High
and
drama
the foul.
Of actual basketball action.
Yeah.
I'd rather watch that than like somebody it. Just, like you it. Know, making me sludge through 5 minutes of what could have been settled in 2 seconds.
I mean, I agree, but the hack approach isn't constant enough. I mean, there are 4 guys who are getting hacked across the league. If you're a Pistons fan, a Clippers fan, and who are the other guys? But I the ones that
almost
I know
every
are
team has one guy at least. It's like this.
Well, but like Amir Johnson was like a bad free throw shooter. But you know what? We just didn't have a problem with it. The Pistons actually have like a legitimate gripe to have with the league and their rules, because yeah, their games are unwatchable at the end.
Yeah, I would say that almost every single team has this problem, and there needs to be a balance between creating. I mean, the shot clock exists for a reason. For example, you do need to make adjustments when teams find ways to exploit rules, as you know, pointing to the conversation we had earlier in terms of the stepping rule. You know, teams are always going to find a way around it, and I don't like adding complicated rules. So, I mean, I would even be willing to just knock it down to possession. If you foul and it's within 2 minutes, or you keep fouling, you get so many fouls per game that are just normal gameplay fouls. And once you cross a threshold, there needs to be some kind of a way to take away the advantage to make it a crappy product.
Okay. Got it. How about you? No points, because points, like, you have to earn
just
buckets. You know, if the ball is at the bottom of the net, then it shouldn't be a point. But okay, so my thought, my reaction. What about if there's a second foul? So the first foul in a possession, unless it's like a shooting foul, doesn't warrant free throws. It just gives you possession. Then the second foul, if there's multiple fouls per possession, then you give them points.
Maybe. I think it would just be easier to give him possession back.
Then defeats the purpose of
if it's the last 2 minutes of a half, or if they've gotten more than 8 fouls in a half, they stop getting free throws. It's just possession, period. So there's no advantage whatsoever. They lose time, You know, so there might be you might be able to kind of get an advantage by making their ability to actually get a shot off lower with less time. But at the very least, it would allow gameplay to continue moving.
Yes, maybe. I don't know. This is why the NBA.
Are you saying that we're not as
solving these problems
capable for this sort of thing? With
I'm not cut out for this,
our
man.
Depth of experience.
I'm not a. My okay, let me go to my changes because I'm a lot more simple. I want the draft to happen
Preach,
after
brother.
The start of free agency. That's the one thing. That's what I care about above all things in the NBA is that draft day should come afterwards, because the whole like Paul George stuff of like, should we trade for Paul George? And then the conversation about how it was possible that Danny Ainge had something on the table, but he wanted to see if he'd get Gordon Hayward first. And we just couldn't do that, you know? It makes no sense to have the draft before, because that all the trades happen and then free agency happens. It's like you don't know what you've got in free agency until
structure.
It happened.
Oh, my dog's getting angry. Dogs, yeah. Be quiet. Thank you very much. Nope.
He doesn't like the concept of being before free agency either. But I just don't. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest issue for me, is that the draft is still before free agency. And it just makes everything more difficult for everybody. It's not like the kids are going to be, it's not like you're doing anything else. It's summer for the kids who are still in school. And, you know, if they are seriously about to get drafted, it's not like they need money until they get drafted.
Can you think of any other issues there would be with it if you did that, though? I tried really hard when I saw it in the notes, and I couldn't think of anything other than one thing, and I'll save it. Okay.
What's the one thing?
The one thing is what happens with the philosophy of drafting best player available over need? Does that go away or does that stay the same? And that's not necessarily a problem so much as a thought experiment.
Is that I would feel like then people would draft based on, well, it would completely depend on what they got. I think it wouldn't change anything. I think if you don't get the free agency moves that you want, so if we didn't get Gordon Hayward, maybe we wouldn't trade the number one overall pick and we would have gone for Markelle Fultz. Fit wise, it wouldn't have necessarily been the right move, but you know what? Maybe we would accept like, all right, well, we need to get the best player available. And we'd heard this past week that Jason Tatum said that Celtics would have picked him one overall regardless. But, you know, maybe, and I'm talking hypothetically, obviously, with that being excluded from the conversation, but maybe if free agency happened first, we struck out, we wouldn't have gone for
I think you might be right, but I'm not entirely sure.
I don't think that it would change to your argument. I don't think it would change anything. I think some teams would still draft based on needs.
If any listeners can think of a particularly egregious problem that could arise from this, let us know in the comments, because I think it's a great idea and I don't know why we don't do it.
I don't either. It just makes no sense to me. But that's my biggest problem. My next thing is I want Jim Boeheim to be a coach in the NBA, so I want to get rid of the defensive 3 seconds so you can play a real 2-3 zone. I think Brad Stevens would be in coach of the year conversations, which he should be, and for some reason he's not. But I think he should be if they get rid of defensive 3 seconds, because he loves his zone, and he'd be able to actually play it in the NBA if they got rid of defensive 3 seconds.
Or at least longer, like 5 seconds, maybe. Yeah.
Maybe. But he just doesn't see the point. What's the problem with having somebody push?
Yeah, just to keep people from colliding with each other at high speed. That's my understanding of it. It might not be the truth, but that's what I've been told. So
the level of athleticism now, and especially with that, would help combat the issue with like the Warriors being so dominant. That would actually revitalize the need for a rim protector, true center. We're talking about, you know, how the big man is obsolete now in the NBA.
Let's do it in summer league and see what happens.
He's back.
Either way.
Do it in G League.
Why not?
And then another college rule that I like is just 1-1 free throws, which, to go back to your previous point, that might make the Hakka
so for those who don't watch the college game, could you explain what that means?
Yeah, so with 17 fouls and a half, because it's not quarters in college basketball, with 17 fouls and a half, you're in the bonus. And so if you get fouled, you get one free throw. If you make it, you get to take a second one. So it basically means it's like, you know, it's rewarding the fact that you've gotten a lot of fouls, but it's not as condemning to a team as they're constantly going to
the line. I don't know if it would make a heck of a big a deal, because the crappy free throw shooting would work itself out over a broader spectrum of shots.
Kind of, but if they miss it, they don't even get a chance for the 50% shot.
But why do we have to see it twice?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm for that. I don't have a problem. I can see the logic. That actually might even be a simpler solution. I mean, you'd have to experiment to see how it plays out, but I think that might even be even more parsimonious solution to what I'm looking for.
And I think we'd have to look at it from like an analytics standpoint, like get Daryl Morey in here to tell us if that analytically would be better to be fouling someone like DeAndre Jordan, like Dwight Howard, like Andre Drummond, and then evaluate if it would still be worth it in a one-on-one situation. Because from a fan's perspective, and I actually didn't think about it from like a time standpoint, but from a fan's perspective, I think it's just a better way to play. And if it were to combat the Haka, DeAndre Haka,
I'd have to really think about it.
That would actually
if you have 100 instances and they make 30% of them, if you cut it into 50 instances in a season, not that that's an accurate number, but just for the sake of argument, they're still going to make the same amount of them over time, and it will influence the game in the same way, in my mind. And again, you can comment on the article for this podcast and tell me I'm absolutely wrong. But my understanding of probability, it will manifest in the same way, just the number of games won and lost, it will be halved based on their screw-ups or successes at the free throw line.
Well, and maybe you would force them to get better at free throw shooting, because clearly the two free throws isn't, because they get the second chance regardless. Maybe the need for those points would get them to try a little bit harder and actually practice. Because that's the thing, is, you know, the argument against the Haka whoever is that, you know what, they need to learn how to take free throws. Everyone else has to do it. They need to learn, and we're not going to change the rules to accommodate a handful
of players.
And that's
a fair thing, but in doing it that way, you don't have to slog through a second opportunity they're going to miss.
Yeah, so maybe this is a simple solution. And I mostly pitched this because I just would enjoy one-on-one. Because I just don't like that the second that you get into the bonus, or the, I don't even know what it's called. Now I'm thinking college. But the second that you're over the limit in terms of fouls, it's, you know, you get two, regardless of what happens. It's condemning in a lot of cases that, you know, you might be down by two, and then suddenly it's a two-possession game with however long, even though it's only your second foul to have. So, that's just me. I like the college game.
I think it might be an interesting twist. I think people with any kind of ability to influence anything are listening. Give it a thought. Give it a try. We know you're out there,
Mr. Silver. We're counting on you. You know you're listening. And Jim Boeheim would be able to coach in the NBA. He can retire from college, leave Syracuse, and come straight to the NBA.
I would
be a legend. Be beautiful. Six straight champion.
Nah, I respect him.
I know you hate Jim Boeheim. You're a UConn guy, but. Yeah. Bill Russell, Celtics legend, was ranked higher than Michael Jordan by his Airness himself, which was pretty interesting. This came on the heels of him talking about Kobe being better than LeBron because like five is better than three, right? That was what he said. So he couldn't then say, well, Bill Russell's, I'm better than Bill Russell, because by his logic.
11.
Russell had how many rings? How many rings did Russell have?
Yeah. You know, there you go. It was definitely, I think, a calculated jab at LeBron. But, I mean, there's also, apart from, you know, analyzing him on his own logic, he never did say that he was the best player of all time that I'm aware of. Not yet.
Once he retires, he can talk.
I mean, he's retired from basketball.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I thought you were talking about Michael Jordan. So sorry.
LeBron James, I mean? No, I'm talking about LeBron James. LeBron James is, once he retires, he's going to be talking about his legendariness. You know, he's going to be like, as legend, as the best that ever played. I'm sure he'll involve himself in these arguments once he's out of the game. But right
now, I feel
like
he's worked his way into a top five conversation, and there's a lot of different ways you can look at who greatest all time, what that means to you, but it's largely a subjective thing. If it's by rings, he's very far from that. If you take into account that the game has changed and has become something that he is particularly good at that maybe other players from another era might have been worse at, which is an untestable hypothesis in the first place, but you can make arguments like that that would put LeBron higher than he is than just based on rings alone. You can look at points scored. You can look at a whole bunch of different criteria and slap together whatever ones you want because there's no standardization. It's mostly a meaningless conversation, in my opinion.
I can agree with that. And I've never been someone who wants to compare the players. I know gets like clicks and stuff, and ESPN loves those conversations and stuff. And when they've got Michael Jordan in a room, they're like,
what
oh,
does that
are
really
you better
mean?
Than LeBron? Stuff like that. And
like when people ask a question
how do you
like
mean?
That, when there's like almost no overlap in their playing career and like their primes were more than a decade apart, the league always changes so much and probably always will in terms of style of play and evolution of skills and available, you know, support for players and rule changes. And, you know, if you go back to the early years of the NBA, it's not even the same game, really. Like, if you can just run around the court and dribble, you know, people's defense is going to look great because nobody's scoring. But
the shot clock,
more off-season,
has changed the game dramatically. And as a result, comparisons between them, it's like trying to compare, like, Australian rules football and U.S. football and soccer. And, like, maybe there was a common origin for these sports and they all adapted into new and different things over time. But at some point, the comparisons get really meaningless, in my opinion. And maybe closer together, like when we're talking LeBron and Michael Jordan, you know, you have some basis for a comparison. But like when we start going back to like people like Bill Russell, it's very hard to create a meaningful conversation on who the better player is that isn't just, you know, tugging on your heartstrings or whatever you consider to be important. Yep.
Well, Michael Jordan admitted it, or acknowledged it, I guess I should say. But it's something that, and it's being talked about because I guess it would have been a conversation either way. But he had to be asked his hierarchy because of the fact that he put Kobe above LeBron. And then suddenly they're like, all right, well, let's talk about the best ever then. And he got into this conversation. But I see the rationale for talking about it. I don't think that we should necessarily put any merit into it. And like, I would enjoy watching like a 2K simulation of things like that. You know, it'd be fun to see like Russell's Celtics teams versus the 90s Bulls. I think that'd be entertaining. Or versus the 2016 Cavs. You know, it's fun to have those conversations, but I
those,
hate that
I,
something
I get,
is such
I
a big deal.
On whether like where LeBron was in a prominent writer's Twitter feed recently, not even recently, like 6 months ago. And people, I am still getting answers on not quite a daily basis, but people will still chime in on that debate. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, no, people get really heated about these things. I don't exactly know why, but people get so defensive over LeBron James.
Some circumstances
and,
a good thing.
You know, where he stats, where he's and stats. I think stats are the best way to describe these things and to find a solution if we're really looking for answers. And LeBron is climbing. Yeah, and it's like, well, MVP. Like, Michael Jordan had what? 3 MVPs by the time he was 28 or something, and that was like a comparison when LeBron was turning 28. I'm pulling the numbers out of my ass right now, but they're that comparison, right? MVPs by a certain age. You know, Russell Westbrook is dominant. Kevin Durant is
how big will Bill Russell
dominant.
Be in today's
Steph Curry.
NBA? But big men that, are so limited. I'm sure he'd probably find a way to succeed in different ways.
Yeah, and like you can look at these metrics and like in any capacity you can skew them to find a way to argue for your own side. So, but it's cool. It's cool that he acknowledges that Russell is great. Was Russell the one during the ESPYs who turned around and looked at everybody? He's like, I could beat all of you. Yeah. So, you know, it's fun and it's cool because he's like the grandpa that we all love, you know? He just, at least for us fans right now, and then the fans that obviously witnessed his dominance. I'm only 23 years old, so I didn't get to see him just crush everybody, but you know, it's cool that the game respects game. And I think that's what I acknowledge. That's what I appreciate the most in the NBA is when it's more respect than just like a, oh, I'm better than you because I'm all, I appreciate respect more. And that's why I like that his airness gave credit where credit was due to Russell.
So, and since we're talking about old school basketball players, did you see that graphic artist who works for the NBA? I forget what his name was off the top of my head, so forgive me. But he put out a series of tweets with so-called contemporary hairstyles for classic NBA players.
Whose was your favorite? Because I really like Scouts.
I was not a fan.
I think Dallas was my favorite.
I mean, it wasn't as bad as Kevin Garnett's. I don't know what that was. Yeah, it looked like somebody like shaved their pubes off and slapped it on his head. Yeah, it was.
You made the write up, right?
Very challenging. I like Paul Pierce's a lot.
Yeah, that was beautiful. Well, I'm glad someone had like the Elfrid Payton, right? The, like kind of like really rough. Like everything is going on and it's like straight in the air kind of deal. Like the Frankenstein kind of deal. Yeah, that's right. I don't like that look. And someone had that. Fortunately, I don't think it was the Celtic, but that was entertaining. I really enjoyed
that. One of the most realistic ones, I think, was Larry Bird's.
Yeah. Well,
they gave him like a mullet kind of deal.
Wait, I don't remember. I need to look at this. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, NBA guy, NBA photoshopper. Hang on, I'm gonna find these because I looked at them. I didn't spend a ton of time looking at them, but I was entertained.
It was probably the most realistic contemporary haircut out of all of them, but I don't know, just didn't like it.
No, I mean I didn't like it because I appreciate their hair for what they had. But, yeah, okay. Yeah, the Kevin Garnett one is it like a Miles Turner?
Yeah, one? Very like bad Miles bad Turner. Miles it just looks like a bad toupee.
Yeah.
Kobe's look really good, and look I don't good. Really feel comfortable saying that, but it is what it is. I think so.
Is that Kelly Oubre? Did they just literally take Kelly Oubre's hair and put it on Kobe?
Oh yeah,
Dwayne Wade looks awful. Iman Shumpert kind of deal. And oh yeah, they did give Larry with like the buzz on the side. Okay, that's what you're talking about. I don't care for that.
At first, it rubbed me the wrong way, but it grew on me after a little bit. Not literally. No.
Are you going to switch that hairstyle?
I'm a 41-year-old man, and though I have not been cursed with what so many of my contemporaries have been in terms of losing it, I just don't like to have it anymore. I had long hair for many a year, and, you know, it's just too hot, too much work. I'm lazy.
Yeah, well, you're down in Mexico. We're up north.
If I was cold, I would probably think about growing some more hair, but...
Well, we've got preseason basketball coming up soon. Finally. Kind of.
Yeah.
Less than 2 months. Right?
Math? Now.
Yeah, less than 2 months as of listening to the podcast. Yeah, right now.
We
calendar cool.
After
Good job.
All.
We did it. Good work, everybody. Yeah, we're almost there. Doldrums are still a ways. We got a while. We're not even halfway there. You can look at it whichever... There's
half
both
glass,
perspectives, you know. You can find
glass half full, glass
on
half
either
empty.
Side. Yeah, there's we can find all those things. But yeah, it's almost there. And Isaiah, like I said earlier, he says his hip is feeling good, and you know we'll get to see Gordon Hayward in preseason, which is gonna be exciting. Get to see what Brad wants to roll out as far as the lineup looks like.
We'll get some closure. Who's gonna actually be on the roster with so many guaranteed contracts? We are at 17. Well, anyway, we have 16 guaranteed regular season non-two-way contracts, and we are We have one two-way contract with Kadeem Allen and one likely with Jabari Bird. I'm not sure what the holdup is with that. I'm just assuming it's probably minor details and they're taking their time because they can. But it's going to be interesting. Someone's got to go.
Yeah. Anything you're working on?
Well, we've got a bunch of new writers coming onto the site, so keep an eye out for them. I'm helping them along and getting them situated so they can learn our site practices and get fully situated. Some really good guys coming on, so keep an eye out for their stuff. I'm doing a lot of that. I don't have anything in particular that I'm working on, but I'm scraping the bottom of the internet just to find anything that's relevant to the Celtics. Keep those of you who really want to see something coming. If it's not, you know, hard news, forgive us. There's no hard news. Or if there is, you know, we pounce on it when it happens. So keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, it's going to be a long Critical. August.
We'll start to consolidate.
September
yeah.
stuff starts. No, actually, September's bad. But at least there's other things happening, you know? Like, it's like people going back to school and, like, it's fall. There's, like, things happening in September. So it's like August, you're just kind of, like, chilling, you know? Summertime. No basketball. It's sad. Also, college usually starts up in October.
Indeed.
Like college games. So there's stuff going on, but... Well, you can find the pod on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and most podcatcher apps. And make sure you subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And if you like what you hear, we'd really appreciate it if you rate us 5 stars. It helps us be seen by other listeners and just helps us out. So if you don't like something or you have a suggestion, we'd really appreciate it if you actually let us know on a Celtics Life article in a comment or on Twitter with the hashtag CLPod, just because we want to bring you guys the Celtics coverage that you want. Just the way you like it, and that's all we got for you as far as
absolutely
news comes
just
today.
Make
so
sure
that
check out the links at the top of Celtics Life. Normally we sell tickets through there during the regular season and the playoffs. That obviously isn't happening, but we do, as many regular listeners know, have a very huge variety of shirts and hoodies in our store. Can't get them anywhere else, and buying one really helps us keep this podcast and the site coming to you at full strength. So if you want to help us out, give back. It's a great way to do it. You get something back for it. We're all happy.
And help us find a new nickname for Jalen and Jason. We need some help on that. New t-shirt.
CLPod hashtag. Put in an ad article. Whatever you want to do on Twitter, on any of our accounts, let us know what you think. We will definitely do something with the best ones we receive.
Yeah. All right, cool. Thanks, man. Have a great week.
Take care,
and
y'all.
We'll see you guys next week, or talk to you guys next week. Yeah.
Thanks.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.